It is our privilege this afternoon to welcome back Mr. William Brownsima, popular old-timer of 82 years, for a return engagement. On our December broadcast, Billy, as we call him, started reminiscing about his boyhood neighborhood down on Elliott Street. Today, he will continue with those recollections. But before he gets started on the south side of Elliott Street,
belt, unbuckle it and lay it on the seat.
You're a great guard, weren't you?
Yeah, a good guard. Well, I worked there 6 months driving the wagon, then I went to work in the office as bill clerk for 6 months. I don't know how I done it, but I got by anyway. Because I figured I would drop out of kindergarten.
No, you didn't drop out of kindergarten.
No, I dropped out.
But you didn't ever get
grade
to high school, did you?
I didn't even get through seventh grade. Well, then I was off. I was there a year, and I got a few days of vacation. I was, of course, naturally went back to my old haunts, Sprick's Barn. Got talking to Mr. Sprick, and he said, "Why don't you buy me out?" And I had the large sum of $200. And Mr. Radicke and Mr. George Young, which was Sprick's son-in-law, we went down the line, so much for this horse and so much for that horse, and the buggy so much, and the hacks, and I well remember it come to $2,975. I paid Mr. Sprick the $200 down, and I was in business. And I signed an agreement to pay him all I could each 6 months, but I had 5 years to pay it in. But I got in under the wire. I had it paid for in 5 years. But in those 5 years, things changed quite a bit. I had all driving horses.
All right, now what was the nature of your business at first?
Well,
what
just
was
livery
it?
Stable, horses and buggies and hacks for funerals
just,
and stuff.
Just rented.
Yeah,
and,
just horses and buggies and hacks. Mm-hmm. And then we pulled a hearse for Boer, and we furnished a team. Boer had a hearse, and Keel had a hearse. We had to keep them clean and furnished a team for the funerals. Well, then cars started to come a little bit, so I bought a Model T Ford from Gus Tillman, when he was located on Franklin Street, right near the old Riverview Hotel. And I can remember real well, I didn't pay because I didn't have the money, but I had to pay that Model T Ford cost $818, and we used that to carry passengers, but there was no such thing as a taxi them days. We called it horse and auto livery.
I love that.
And we was in that for a while. I monkeyed with that night and day and so on. 6 years. Each 2 years, we got a new Model T. And we quit that. We got, that time, we had larger horses and hauling gravel and digging basements. And then, of course, the truck started coming. In fact, the first truck, commercial truck in Grand Haven that I remember was Nat Robin with a real speed wagon to deliver coal. And I bought a truck from General Motors sales division to Grand Rapids. First truck, ton and a half truck, 12-foot deck. And I paid $1,995 for it.
For your first truck?
First truck. That was I supposed to pay it. I didn't have the money. I bought it on tick. And of course, every time I needed money, I went and seen Mr. Sherwood. And there's one thing I want to put a plug in for the security first. Of all the years that I was in business, I borrowed money all the time, most of the time. Mr. Sherwood never refused me a loan.
Without any great collateral,
well,
I suppose.
No collateral, just
horses. Just on your word.
I boarded horses, doctor's horses, and in fact, Mr. Sherwood had saddle horse, and his wife had a saddle horse. J.F. Johnson had a saddle horse, and his wife had a saddle horse. A different one than doctor's horses. We had as high as, 25, 30 horses in the barn sometimes.
Besides your own, you mean?
Yeah. Well, and
or did that include your own?
Then there was a man by the name of Matson. He worked, I don't know if it was General Motors at that time, but he was advertising manager for the Pontiac Motor Company. And he created a slogan on the back of the tires on the cover, "Winning and Holding Goodwill." I was slugging, and he had two cottages out by Stickney Ridge, and he had five horses that he shipped in here in a boxcar, and we boarded the horses, and he kept a hostler right there and took his kids out riding and so forth, and that was... he took care of the horse. We furnished all the feed and stuff. I don't know. I guess we got $15 or $20 a month for feeding them.
For boarding them.
For boarding them,
Well. And you were the only one in town that did that,
then. Yeah, that was the only... We were the only barn. When I first went in, then Rob Riley was in, and then Ed Smith got it later.
And Billy, for people who are newcomers here that might be listening, tell them, where did you have your barn?
I had it right on Fulton Street. Between 2nd and 3rd. The building is still there. It's standing. It's used now by the furniture company as a warehouse. And from there, I was there quite a number of years. And then I moved over to 3rd Street and built a garage and built an office and bought the old John M. Cook property on the corner. Lived in the old house that all those old... Teach family lived in the house, laying right on the ground. I bought it. We raised it up, put a basement under it, remodeled it, and I lived there until I was retired. But I got in the trucking business, and not in a very big way. I done all right. I was in business. I quit in May, and if I would have stayed till the 13th of August that same year, it would have been 45 years that I was in business in Grand Haven.
From the horse and auto livery to the bronze of a transfer.
When I sold out to Butter Ehrman, I had approximately 25 trucks and trailers, which was not a big operation.
No, but when you think you started out with one Model T.
Well, that's about... The wrap-up of my career.
I think
pretty near 45 years.
Right.
Pretty near 45 years.
And definitely a self-made man, not even an education to speak of.
The only place I ever borrowed any money is from Mr. Sherwood.
Well, you've given them a good plug, I'm sure. We've got to take a commission on that. Okay, now let's go back. We left your Elk Street neighborhood on the corner of 2nd.
Third.
We left it on 3rd on the north side.
Yeah.
So now shall we go back to the east end on the south side?
Yeah, back to the west end.
To the west end. Okay.
Right near the railroad.
Near the river. Okay.
Where the Peerless Novelty now stands, there's a big square house there, belonged to the Pelgrim. Bill Pelgrim, that worked in the bank later, his folks, Bill and Art Pelgrim, and Florence Pelgrim. Well, I don't know if there's any more Pelgrims there or not, but they lived there when I was a young kid. The next house was the Keelers, Florence and Flossie Keeler and her folk. And if I remember right, Keeler, the piano factory was just coming to town about that time. They hauled a lot of sand from Clinton and First Street, filling in that property where the piano factory was built.
Is that
right? Mr. Keeler was a teamster. And the Flossie married Henry Deephouse. They're both gone now. The next house was the Raymond. Charlie Raymond. She kept boarders, and they had two or three girls. I know there was Florence Raymond and Agnes Raymond and Charlie Raymond. And at one time, she bought a cow, and she couldn't milk the cow, so my mother had to go over there and milk the cow in the morning and at night. Then the next house was Mrs. Beamhout, and she lived there with her son Barney, whom later got married quite late in life, and he has got two boys in Grand Haven. Barney's now dead. His one son is custodian at the courthouse, and the other one works the challenge in the office.
Oh.
And the next family was a Fisher. They called him Otza Fisher, but he was the father of Charlie Fisher and Van and Fisher's grocery store, Charlie Fisher and Pete Fisher. He was the father of those boys and a few girls. The next house was the Teach family.
Is that the Van Zanten and Fisher grocer?
That
Fisher.
Charlie was
the son.
Charlie's folks.
I see.
Right across, right next to Beam House. Well, the next house was the Teach family, which was quite a large family. How many children they have?
14. I could name them all right down the line.
I don't know if it was 13 or 14.
14.
Sometimes we thought
We used to have a rhyme out of it. And
I got the rhyme.
Hannah, Tilly, Emily, Willie, Marion, Henriette, Emma, Elizabeth. Julia, Otto, Martha, Benny, Dorothy, and Isabel.
Well, we used to hang around. We'd holler, Hanna, Tilly, Willie, Mary, Otto, Benjamin, Dorothy, the baby.
Oh, Isabel was the baby. And
so.
Isabel, that's Mrs. J. Poole.
Oh, yeah.
She's the last one of the
families. Well, anyway,
that was a great
family. And most of the girls got to be school teachers.
You bet those older girls were very
They all got an education,
yes,
most of them. And, Mr. Keats had a little farm out on Ferry Street. I took the cows out there in the morning and cows back at night and done some farming and raised that family.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how he done it, but he done it. And the next family was Skippers. They had two sons, Weeks and Andrew. And Skippers had a sailboat. Used to bring in lumber and cordwood. Also,
a working sailboat, in other words.
Which we had. And then another sailboat used to come in here right along. Indian Bill, they called them. And those sailboats would lay around where the Carvery slept was later.
Mm-hmm.
They'd lay there all winter, see, and they'd do a little work on them.
Uh-huh.
Well, that was Hazel Skipper in Grand Haven. That was her grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the next house was the Bakers. Bill Baker and his brother, they had a store at 7th Street.
Oh,
I think they called it the People's Mercantile Company.
Right, right.
And they had one daughter, Marion,
mm-hmm.
which was a schoolteacher all her life. Now married to Mr. Dalrymple,
Earl
Dalrymple.
She's in Florida now.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next house on the corner was the Stokes home. And there was Johnny Stokes, Fred Stokes, I guess, and the Stokes girl, wasn't there?
Edna,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they lived there, and Mr. Stokes, I guess, worked the Dakes a good share of the time, and Johnny Stokes got to be an engineer on the boat.
And Mrs. Stokes, Mr. Ed Stokes' wife, was one of the Lukens girls that had that famous band, you know, in the early days.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sarah? Sarah Lukens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that would take us to 2nd Street then, would it?
Let's take us 2nd Street.
Okay, now we go across.
Across the street was Old Man Brower. He was a peculiar old fellow, and he was a watchman down at the basket factory. They used to haul logs from the river there, and they made baskets and salary crates. And
now, where was the basket factory?
That was right where the Elliott Street School is now.
Oh, I see. Was that the one the Edwards family had, the basket factory?
Edwards.
Okay.
Edwards, and I think Gerald Cook's father was in on it, and I think Bill Tillman's, Mr. Bill Tillman,
was
the old man, was in on it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Help finance it or
that
something.
That was quite a thriving business.
I think
business,
Mr. Cook, I think he was a bookkeeper in the office for a while, John M. Cook.
Mm-hmm. Is that because of the berry business that they had?
Yeah, berry and celery crates.
Yeah, that they made.
Yeah.
You're mentioning the other day we were talking about how they'd go up the river to get all these berries.
Tell
about that? People wouldn't know about that.
Well, they had the May Graham run up the river. They'd go up as far as Eastmanville or Bass River, and then they just had a big board, gangplank that dropped down to the bank, and the farmers would take the berries to the river, and then they'd carry them on the boat. And then they'd get down here before the Crosby line went out, carry them to the May Graham out of the Crosby line, and it'd be in Milwaukee in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
That was a side wheeler, May Graham.
The May Graham.
They'd stop all the way down the river,
every
crossroad where the farmers could bring their berries.
Yeah.
There's a lot of berries,
raspberries
and strawberries and so forth.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Well, that was the basket factory.
Mm-hmm.
The next house, there was Pete Niederveld. And we had a bean factory here in town at one time where, right near Nat Robbins was there, Mr. Niederveld was kind of the big wheel of the bean factory. They got these beans in. They had a bunch of girls there picking the dirt out of them.
Oh.
And he was also a carpenter. He'd done some remodeling on our house. In fact, he fixed the roof one time and left it partly unwrapped at night. When I got up in the morning, I had an inch of snow all over the bed. But then the next house from Niederveld's was the Lenigas. And that was Fred Swanack's wife, and Mr. Lenig at one time run a meat market.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we getting for time?
They're all fine. Just go on.
And then
there were several girls in that family.
There were quite a few. There was one married to Johnson and one to...
Swanee was the oldest one, married Art Lando. Yeah. She was a dressmaker, too.
Had, two of the girls had a millinery store downtown.
That was right.
They called them the Lenega sisters or something.
Then Ethel was the next one that married Mr. Swantag.
Yeah.
And her daughter, Liz Muskegon, married Dr. Knowles, I think.
Yeah.
Nolan. And then Ida.
Yeah.
She didn't she used to work for Dr. McAlpin?
Ida.
You remember in that?
Yeah, Ida. Yeah. Ida Lenega. Yeah. That's right. She used to drive Doc's little car or something.
Yeah. And then she married Billy Boongard.
That's right.
First. Yeah. And then Angie was the youngest one.
Angie the youngest one married Bob Johnson. Johnson.
Yeah. You were telling about when they were in Milwaukee, she called you up? No. You used to drive these people places anyhow, I guess, didn't you?
Well, they had a little rubbish to go to the dump or anything. They'd just holler, call Brunson, send a pickup truck to take our junk to the dump. Andy Johnson used to, and different ones. Mrs. Wesley Lee had to go up and haul her junk to the dump, too, some of our trucks.
When they were building their new place.
Yeah. Next house was Frederick's. If I remember right, Frederick's and Blicker's were some relation. And they had a foundry down on, right near the railroad track where the piano factory now stands. And they had one son, Carl Frederick's. And I don't know what became of the family, but then the next house, I told you about Skipper's living down the other block, the sailboat. He brought lumber in and he built a new house next to Frederick's.
Oh.
And that's where the Strang girl lives now.
Oh.
Skipper's built that house.
Uh-huh.
And the Strang, Bill Strang, not Bill Strang, but...
Frank Strang's family?
Bill Strang lived there. Worked for the Board of Light and Power all his life.
And
the daughter lived there alone now.
Now.
Yeah. Then the next house was the Nyssen house on the corner. Bill Nyssen was...
Wasn't there a Van Hoof in there, didn't you tell me?
Yeah, Van Hoof was in there before Van Hoof. Kate Van Hoof and those two boys. Andrew Van Hoof, he was a Coast Guardman at that time.
Was that the father you're talking
father,
about? The
yeah.
father was.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, that was the father. And they had two boys. One of them married Julia Radicke.
And this Kate Van Hoof was
Kate Van Hoof was
a teacher here.
She was a teacher here.
And then she married a man by the name of Sargent.
Yeah, they lived there for a while, and then they moved out on... Lakeshore Drive. That's the Van Hoof family and Skipper's there, old lady Skipper's and the skipper from the sailboat. And on the corner was Nyssen. They had one boy, Bill Nyssen. And they run the Grand Haven Steam Laundry.
Now where was that?
And as near as I can figure out, it was in the bottom of where the Salvation Army is now.
Right down here on Washington Street.
Right down on Washington Street. And they had a horse and wagon. One delivered laundry, and Bill was the only boy, a young fella. They lived on that corner. And across the street, of course, was John Cook's store. But Bill Strang, or Bill Nyssen, the young fella, is about my age. Far as I know, he ended up in Muskegon, but I lost track of him in later years. I don't know what became of him. But Bill, his father, was an alderman at one time. When the interurban run as far as the swing bridge on the other side of the river, and he was an alderman, some kind of a deal the alderman made. And a few days after that, they commenced laying track from the bridge to Grand Haven, the interurban run into Grand Haven.
Oh.
They made some kind of a deal with the railroad company. They wouldn't let him into town for several years.
You mean the interurban just came to the edge of our town?
To the bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, they run buses from the Cutler House.
Oh.
Dan Riley run buses and carried passengers from the Cutler House to the bridge, the swing bridge, right across the river there.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah. That was for about a year or two, I don't know how many years. Then finally they got a franchise or got a commission to come into town. Got permission to come into town. And when the interurban run as far as right back at the hotel, that was where the interurban had their car barns and freight office. And they also run interurban finally.
Back of the, what's now the Schuller.
And they finally got an open car, the same company, and they went out to the lake.
Sure, remember that. Well, then that brings us up to the 3rd Street, does it? Okay, now I think there's enough time for a subject that I wish you'd tell about. You were telling me about the other day about these wild horses they got in.
Well, When I was a boy about 13, 14 years old, there were some fellows, of course, I didn't know them at that time, but I got acquainted with them because I was horse nutty. And they brought in 3 carloads of Mustangs, wild horses, never been harnessed, never had a rope on them. They put 30 in a car. They had them right where the Can-Do Industries are now in a lot. And the 90, the first herd they brought in, 90 of them, sold so fast, they went back to Montana and they brought in another herd. And everybody that could raise $25 or $30 owned the Mustangs. It was driving them up and down the street with a braking harness on. Well, then they went back and got the third set. So that meant 270 Mustangs around Grand Haven and surrounding country. Farmers and everybody bought Mustangs, wild horses. Then they broke them. Some of them turned out all right, and some of them turned out to be worth nothing. But everybody around town was riding around on a Mustang or driving one.
Did you have one? Sprick
had a half a dozen or more, and of course I had the option of getting them, so I always had a horse to ride or a horse to drive. Mm-hmm.
Who are some of the other people you remember that?
Well, Jim Oakes and McMahon and Nyland had a bottling works out the east end, and he had broke a pair and had them on the bottling works. Everybody had Mustangs around town that had a woodshed to keep them in. I was a pretty good rider at that time, and the Kramer brothers, I was hanging around there a good deal, and Kramer brothers wanted me to go back to Montana with them. And they had races there on them ranches and wanted me to ride horses. I guess I weighed about 100 pounds soaking wet at that time.
Ideal jockey, I suppose.
Yeah, I didn't think nothing them days. Sprick would buy a horse in Grand Rapids, put a saddle on him, and ride him to Grand Haven. Think now and over to Whitehall.
You would do that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh.
When I was a boy.
Oh, just for the fun of it?
No, Sprick would buy a horse and had to get him home, so I'd take the train with a saddle, carry a saddle on my arm, and go to Grand Rapids or Whitehall or Muskegon and ride them home.
Oh, but those weren't bucking broncos.
No. Some of them wasn't too good either.
Ah.
But that's my career in the horse business. I was always a horse nutty.
But that wild horse episode, that's fascinating.
Yeah,
that must have been something.
Some of them that never got broke.
I'm going to say, weren't there any accidents with so many?
Oh, yeah, they'd run away and so on.
Yeah.
Of course, there wasn't any cars them days.
No,
so
that's
couldn't
right.
damage much. Yeah. They damaged themselves more, the buggy that hit trees or telephone poles or something else. But the Kramer brothers brought 3 herds in here in that one summer, 90 in each herd, about 30 horses in each car.
Well, that's most interesting. I certainly appreciate your coming back again today and telling us about the old early days, especially the horses.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Mm-hmm.